Welcome to Trailblazers, where we explore the inspiring journeys of entrepreneurs and industry leaders who are redefining success and making a lasting impact. These game changers are driving progress in our region and around the world. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Melody Bradford. Tonight on Trailblazers, we're sitting down with a woman whose story is about so much more than football. Yes, the world may know her as the mother of NFL superstar Saquon Barkley, but tonight we're talking to the woman behind the headlines, the woman behind the strength, the woman behind the foundation. Tanya Johnson is an entrepreneur, a mother, a grandmother, vice president of the Michael Ann and Saquon Barkley Hope Foundation, and a leader whose impact reaches far beyond the field. From raising a family through adversity and sacrifice to helping guide a foundation focused on empowering underserved youth and families to building her own identity as a businesswoman and community advocate, Tanya's journey is one rooted in resilience, faith, discipline, and service. And while millions see the touchdowns, the interviews, and the national spotlight, tonight we're talking about the behind-the-scenes moments, the motherhood, the balancing act, the lessons, the pressure, the pride, the partnerships, and the quiet strength it takes to help shape greatness while still holding on to yourself in the process. We're also talking about football, family, leadership, legacy, becoming a grandmother, and what success really means when the cameras are off. Please welcome a powerful woman and true trailblazer, Tanya Johnson. Thanks.
Hello.
Hello. Tanya, so before the world knew your son's name, before the NFL, before the headlines, who were you? Who was Tanya Johnson growing up? And what life experiences shaped the woman you would eventually become?
Well, Tanya Johnson growing up is a mother from the Bronx, born and raised. And the reason I say mother, because I became a mother at such an early age. Mm-hmm. So, mother from the Bronx, born and raised. Just an individual who just really focused on family and taking care of my first child. Because at that time, that was the only one I had. And that's really was it. I won't say my life was over once I had my child, but I knew I had this human being in my hands and at my disposal that I had to take care of. So
it was a responsibility. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Now, you're not originally from the Lehigh Valley. What brought you here, and what did those early years look like as you were building a life and raising a family?
So when what brought me initially to the Valley was my aunt moved down here with her children. She wanted a change from the Bronx environment, New York environment, and she had four children. So she moved down here, mm-hmm. and then my grandmother followed her, my mm-hmm. mother's mother, and my aunt would always take my daughter.
Okay.
So she would come up to New York, which I think was an excuse to get away from her children for a little bit and leave them with my grandmother.
That's great.
So she would come to New York, stay for a couple of days, grab my daughter, bring her back down here. But the catch was we always had to come down here to pick her up.
Mm-hmm.
So and then when we came down to, you know, grab her, bring her back to New York, we would stay for a couple of days. And it was just a different environment, you know. A change. As a child, I knew New York was not going to be my final destination if I had any hand in it. I'm not trying to be funny, but that's not where I wanted to stay. That's not where I wanted to. I didn't see my life in New York bound for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
You know, I did have visions of being somewhere else. So that gave me the opportunity by them moving down here to see, you know, a different environment and experience a different environment other than where I was from. And I liked it. And mm-hmm. the kids enjoyed themselves, and they was able to just run around freely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't have to be, like, sitting in a park in New York and all eyes is, like, every 5 seconds, where's mm-hmm. this one? So I decided to move down here.
That's awesome. That's all. And what year was that?
That was in 2001.
Okay. You mentioned that you became a mother at a young age, and motherhood clearly became one of the defining parts of your journey. What did becoming a mom teach you about strength and responsibility early on?
Well, basically, it taught me that, again, that you have this life that you're responsible for. So that gave me the strength. With me having a child at 15, it wasn't like, okay, I had a child, and now here, I'm not raising this child. The woman's and my family, as I should say, that was my responsibility to raise that child, you know, with their support and their guidance, but... So it taught me strength taught me that to care about somebody other than myself, mm-hmm. you know, or dolls, or even though I didn't play with dolls, sure. but I had a real life human doll,
right.
you know, so it was different.
And so how many children do you have? And tell me a little bit about them.
I have five children. So my oldest is Rashard. He'll be 39. And then I have my daughter Shaquana. She'll be 33. Then I have my middle son Saquon. He'll be 30. And then I have my twins, Aaliyah and Ali, and they'll be 24.
Okay.
And wow. then I have a stepson. I think our little Alibi is about maybe 35.
And we'll get into some of, you know, what makes some of the other kids so successful and how you kind of managed a few things. But I know listeners are going to want to hear the story. So I'm going to ask you a couple questions about Saquon. Mm-hmm. At what point when in his journey did you realize that what he had wasn't just about talent, but maybe it was about something truly special that was going to, you know, resonate on the national stage. Talk to me a little bit about that experience, because that's got to be something, a family dynamic that switches things up. Mm-hmm. But also, how do you, you know, make the decision to follow it and pursue it?
I can be honest. I'm not a sports person. I was just a behind-the-scenes mother. I mean, I did attend his games, especially in high school. But for me to really see, you know, that, oh, this is someone who's different, and especially with, like, the whole audience was mm-hmm. in Penn State.
Okay.
You know, and then I'm like, oh, okay, this is different, you know. And so that's when I seen something different, and that was in Penn State.
Was it scary? Was it exhilarating?
No, actually, to be honest and to be transparent, it was kind of annoying at first. I'm like, what is all these people, and why is they? And I'm like, oh. Like, no, I'm not a person who likes attention. Uh-huh. So it's like, leave him alone. Like, that was my thing as being a mother, you know. But then it's like, okay, well, I mean, he's producing out there and everybody is loving him. And he was just staying straight, focused, and concentrating on what he need to do and where he want to be. So.
Were there certain conversations that you had that helped him to stay grounded?
I mean, I think the conversations that we had with all children, you know what I mean? We mm-hmm. was always forthcoming with them and always transparent with them. Mm-hmm. So we didn't sugarcoat nothing. We, you know, our mothers and fathers and family members before us always had this thing. And I think that goes with any nationality, but it's like they like to stay quiet mm-hmm. and everything is a secret. And they don't like to tell anything. We didn't do that with our children. We just told them anything and everything and all of our experiences because... No, it can't. It's not to deter you from making your own mistakes because you have to make your own mistakes.
Right.
But if you have ideas and you know like what certain people went through, especially family-based, it can help, you know, determine your outcome of mistakes that you may make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, back to the kind of the family dynamic. When one child starts receiving national attention, I imagine it can shift family dynamics quite a bit. How intentional were you about making sure that the other children also felt equally seen, valued, and supported? Like, what did that look like?
Well, everybody is their own individual.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So that's another thing we always taught our kids. You are an individual in your own right. So what one person's success is not your success,
mm-hmm.
right? You have to make your own, you know, make your own path. But I can really say I give that to Saquon because he always makes sure he kept his siblings grounded in a value and make sure they was just equally important. Mm-hmm. You know, if he was doing something, we all was doing something.
That's incredible. That's awesome. Now, there are many parents who become known through their children's success. Why was it important for you to also build your own identity through entrepreneurship and opening your retail business? Because you have something right down here in Allentown. Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about that and how that came to pass.
So it actually came to pass, me deciding that I want to open up my own retail, which is it's a resale boutique,
mm-hmm.
is I was going to do it out of my house. And it was just too much going on. I really yeah. didn't have the time to be going back and forth, you know, shipping stuff out and
right.
doing those things. So my children was like, you know, Mom, maybe get a store. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll try that. I mean, I worked in retail basically my whole life,
huh?
you know. So it was a no-brainer. It was easy for me to do because I had the experience. And that's what I decided to do.
That's awesome. And I've been in the store. If you, for the listeners that haven't been there yet, they should definitely check it out because you have some cool stuff. I think I'm going to be back in this week.
Thank you.
Starting a business, though, takes courage, especially when balancing family and public attention. What did entrepreneurship teach you about yourself? Because it's not easy being an entrepreneur,
No.
And retail, brick and mortar spaces anymore, it's kind of hard to even get people in the door.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me a little bit about some of the challenges or risks that you encountered, but also what they taught you.
I mean, it taught me that it is a struggle. They say give most businesses 2 years. So I'm still on that 2 year brink. But it also taught me to be resilient. It showed me how much strength I actually have because I think I have adult ADHD and I learned that.
So, I think we all do.
So that was with that, I'm able to, move around and multitask and wear many, many hats.
Yeah. I'm going to shift gears here a little bit. Because you guys have started just a wonderful foundation. The Michael Ann and Saquon Barkley Hope Foundation has become such an important force supporting underserved youth and families. What inspired the foundation's mission, and what role do you personally play in helping to lead it?
So actually what inspired it was we were sitting on Saquon's couch one day, and he's like, I think I want to open up, start my own foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I want to attribute it to my late grandmother, which is his father's mother, my husband's mother.
Michael Ann. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Because of, like I said, being transparent with our children and, that he was well aware of his father's mother experience and the trials and tribulations she went through.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the name came about, because we want to, besides also helping underprivileged kids, as we move forward, we want to touch drug use, homelessness. So that's what compelled it.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about what you guys are doing right now, what you've done historically as mm-hmm. far as fundraising is concerned, and also what's upcoming and how, if people wanted to get involved, how they do that.
Well, fun fact here is we actually started the foundation in 2018. A lot of people is not aware of that.
Mm.
We did start getting our foot in, out there in 2020. And how we started fundraising, it was just me. And then I brought on Alberta Scarferro with me.
Mm.
She was a township, Whitehall Township Commissioner. And we just started doing bingos. We did. And so the money we were raised from the bingo events, we would do turkey drives. We would do backpack drives. We would do we did sneaker drives. We utilize bingo events. And actually, I got to start doing another one because I'm getting feedback. Hey, when is another one? But that's how we started doing bingos.
And so and now I've seen galas happen. Mm-hmm. I've seen pictures from that. Where does the money go?
So the money goes, again, to underserved youth.
Okay. Various other organizations?
Yeah, we partner with various other organizations. We give out scholarships. We help people who's in need. We're not based traditional, we're conventional. We help anyone who needs help,
mm-hmm.
And if we feel fit that they need help because of the experiences that we, with homelessness. So we may have an organization that reach out to us that have a mother or a family with children who's on the brink of homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
We send the organization the money to pay their rent and security, or put them in a hotel. We did the Salvation Army event. We partnered with Ashley Furniture for the families that was affected by the fires. We gave them mattresses for their children. At the same event, we gave away toys to those families that was affected. So there's a lot of stuff. We partnership with St. Luke's, actually. We did that for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And if people wanted to get involved with any one of those events or just contribute, is there a website?
It's the MSAB Hope Foundation .com. That's the website. And then our email is msabhopefoundation@gmail.com.
Okay. That's good to
know.
And
if you see any events that comes up, it's msab events@gmail.com. So we keep it separate for people who's interested as far as any event. Like we're having a Alpha Invitational Flag Football Tournament, which is going to take place June 20th and June 21st. We're taking over the Whitehorse School District. So we had it wherein it was only invitational. We was only inviting the top divisional teams, and then we just opened it up to the public this week.
Okay. That sounds exciting. Mm-hmm. So they can go to the website, I guess, if they want to find out about upcoming events and things of that nature on an ongoing basis. You mentioned a little bit about some of those partnerships. No foundation succeeds alone. What partnerships and collaborations or community relationships have been most instrumental in helping the foundation grow and serve others, but what others need to be forged? Who else would you like to have conversations with?
I mean, we would like to have conversations with a lot of people. I really don't have one on the top of my head, because we're just moving forward and working with who we can work with. I don't want the foundation to get caught up under any other organization. Mm-hmm. I want it to stand alone. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a lot of foundations that is, I would say, powered by, or, you know, and they have to go by their rules, regulations, and guidelines. And I don't want the foundation. I'm the vice president of the foundation. Saquon's the president. And we don't want it to get tied to wherein we only can help a certain, certain bracket of people or a certain organization. Or no, we help with funerals. We help with this when there's people who can't afford, the funerals, especially if it's student athletes. And that's what we tend to focus on a lot. I want the foundation to stay more focused, more now. Mm-hmm. I don't want that.
You want to be able to have the latitude in order to be able to make the impact.
And make the decisions based on what we feel is fit,
right?
Not what someone else tells us is fit.
Now, blue sky planning, if you were to think about where it might go within the next year or 2 years, what would you plan? What would you like to see maybe happen? A mission trip or?
Yes.
Yes? Okay, yes. Talk to me a little bit about that.
I was talking before to, oh my gosh, she does a lot of missionary trips, and she focused with women's of other countries and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I did speak to her before. So we were supposed to have a sit down. I would like for the foundation and our team to go out there and just help others.
Mm-hmm.
Help others. And sometimes you have to go out. Like, we may have experienced certain things, but some members on our team may not have experienced the hardships. So just to go see someone else's struggles, it just makes you stronger. And I want everyone to experience that on our team. So
I just went to a mission trip in April, and you're right. You're dead on. It's definitely impactful. And until you're immersed in that culture and you're immersed in that circumstance and environment, it really holds a lot of gravity, but you realize how it empowers you to want to do and be better. I think Maya Angelou said, when you know better, you do better, right?
And when you experience other people's stuff too and what they're going through and their adversities, you say to yourself, oh my gosh, I complain a lot. What am I complaining for? Because they have it. Someone always have it worse than what you have.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you look forward to the future of the foundation, are there any pathways that still need to be forged to take the mission to the next level? Do you have a board? Are there certain people that you'd like to see get involved with the organization?
Well, we do have a board, and the board is very limited. But within this year, that's when we started, when we was working on a gala, we actually opened up our board. So we have a lot of advisors to the board.
Okay.
And we are going to be having a lot of more board members.
Okay.
And that is our goal for 2026 going into 2027, to grow the board, to get extra help and other people's expertise on different things. So we are growing the board. So if anybody is interested, they can reach out and,
absolutely. Your family's journey hasn't been without challenges, pressure, sacrifice, or in some cases, public scrutiny. What has been one of the hardest moments you've faced, and how did you push through it?
The hardest moment that I faced with my family was when we didn't have a place to live. But, you know, I won't go too much into that because it's a redundant story, but for me. But with the help of friends and some family members, we was able to push through. And then our strength alone as being parents and know that we are responsible for these children, we did what we had to do to get a roof over our children's head. But we did experience homelessness. I mean, when I say homelessness, a lot of people be like, oh, well, you was homeless. You was sleeping in your car. You was on the street. No, we wasn't. We just didn't have a home for a family of seven. That was ours. We was in someone else's home.
What did that experience teach you?
It just gave me a feeling of I'm not going to go through this again. I didn't like it. I didn't like my kids not being all together. You know, I didn't like the fact that we had two with us. One was here, two was there, you know, and throughout, once we finished working, we go check on one, go check on the other, then go back to where we were staying with the other two. I didn't like that mm-hmm. because I'm not seeing my kids while they're sleeping. You know, I don't know what they're going through. They're in other people's households. I didn't like that experience.
Let's talk a little bit about being a grandmother, right? So now you've entered an entirely new chapter. You became a grandmother. What has that experience been like emotionally for you?
So I have 8 grandchildren and it's going to be 9.
Wow.
Yeah. So
I keep you busy.
Very much so. But, it's been wonderful. I love my grandchildren. I love my grandchildren. I think I love my grandchildren more than I like the kids. But, you know, because the difference is they get to go home. My kids, I had to keep them with me.
Right.
So, but my oldest, she just turned 20, my oldest granddaughter, and she's doing well. She's actually goes to Moravian. You know, she's taking up psychology. She actually works at the ice cream shop here in Bethlehem. Wonder Waffle. And then I have, how many granddaughters I have? I have 4 granddaughters, 2 grandsons, 3 grandsons, and I don't know what this last one is until maybe the end of the month we'll find out.
Wow, exciting.
When they give birth.
I'll be lifting that one up in prayer. You've raised children who are successful, not only professionally, but by all accounts, grounded and family-oriented. What has always been your philosophy on parenting?
To do better than your parents. Mm-hmm. And that's how I stand on that. And that's really the only thing. You go through your experience growing up, but I think as a parent, you want your kids to do, you know, that's what I hope my parent wanted for me, and I'm quite sure she did, both of them, to be better than them. And I just want our children to be better than us. Mm-hmm. That's it. Listen and hear our, you know, what we went through and mistakes and what we did accomplish, but forge your own way and do better than what we did. Mm-hmm. That's my parenting advice. Teach your kids to do better than what you did.
And that consistency and structure, you know, has made a lasting impact and everyone can see it. Okay, so can we talk football for a moment?
We can, because I don't know much about football, but we can.
I don't either. My son loves football and he loves the Eagles. He does bleed green, I'm not going to lie. What's your favorite football movie, what's your favorite football move to watch? And outside of supporting your son, do you have a favorite NFL team or player you've always enjoyed?
Okay, so for that, no. I don't watch football.
No?
My family be like, oh, you're going to have a Super Bowl party? No, I'm not looking at I'm not looking at football. You know, everybody can come over, sure, but I'm not cooking or nothing for you guys. You can do what y'all want. The only time I think that Super Bowl would have mattered is when my child was going to play in it, and then we finally got there, and that was an exciting experience.
Was it?
But as far as football moves, I'm the type that they're like, yay, yay, oh my gosh. And I'm more or less like, oh my God, this kid is going to hurt themselves. So I don't have a favorite move. I think I'm more or less like, I'm the one with the ready with the Band-Aid. Like, oh,
yeah,
that's me.
Yeah, I think I would probably. I know my son was, he's 16, so he's young, but he got hurt in a football play. Mm. And I just remember like, oh my goodness, I can't imagine what that must be like on the national stage. But Now, I know that you're a strong supporter of the Eagles, because if anybody from the Eagles Nation, mm-hmm. you know, hears this interview, I'm sure they're going to, you know, want to know that you have the support there. Are there any other teams that maybe before he got into, he went to the Eagles that you were a strong supporter of? Or,
I mean, well, I supported the teams that he was part of. Mm-hmm. So when he was with the Giants, I mm-hmm. supported the Giants. Okay. You know, and it was fun working.
And you're
with
from
them.
New York.
I'm from
right?
New York, yeah. So it was actually when he got drafted there, it was ideal. Yeah. And my husband is a Jets fan. My older son is a Giants fan. So it, you know, it kind of correlated, you know.
Yeah.
But and the Giants was, as far as like community service, and they was wonderful. I'm not gonna, you know, I won't put them down with that.
Yeah.
But then now he's with the Eagles, so mm-hmm. I'm supportive of the Eagles. But as far as any other teams, I am not. No.
You don't watch. Mm-mm, you don't.
I don't okay. watch. I don't. No.
Yeah. I still can't understand the game, no
Me
matter
either.
How many times.
They
it's...
always say I need a football book for dummies.
I do. Maybe we can author it together, because it's I
mean,
yeah.
What was that? They look at me and I'm like, I know when they do a touchdown. You know, that is about
I
it.
I do too.
That's about
and
it.
And I was a cheerleader. That's anyway. when you look at your life today, motherhood, business, family, philanthropy, becoming a grandmother, what does success truly mean to you now?
It's a blessing. I look at everything as I'm blessed. You know, I like the way life turned out, and I just continue with I'm blessed.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
I'm blessed. And I know that if and when I leave this earth, my children are where they need to be. They have so far much more to go,
mm-hmm.
but I think they will do well.
Yeah. And if you were going to share advice with leaders today in today's world, as you look at your grandchildren, as you look at the legacy that you leave behind with your kids, what advice do you have for leaders today?
Get to know people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think people tend to throw money around and use that. I don't like that form of thing. I think get to know someone, sit down with them, talk with them, hear them out. Try to put yourself as you're talking with them in their shoes. You know, I think the world would be a much better place if we operate on that level.
Mm-hmm. And as
get
a team.
Get to know people.
Mm-hmm. As a team.
It takes a village.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Not a dollar.
What an incredible and heartfelt conversation with Tonya Johnson. Tonight reminded us that behind every headline, every stadium moment, every championship run, there are often people whose strength, sacrifice, guidance, and love help build the foundation long before the spotlight arrived. But what makes Tonya's story so powerful is that she never allowed herself to exist only in someone else's shadow. She built her own path as a grandmother, an entrepreneur, a leader, a grandmother, and an advocate helping impact lives through the Michael Ann and Saquon Barkley Hope Foundation. Her journey is one of resilience, reinvention, faith, discipline, and purpose, and a reminder that success is not just measured by fame or achievement, but by the lives we touch, the family we build, and the legacy we leave behind. Thank you for joining us on another episode of Trailblazers. I'm Melody Bradford, and we'll see you next time as we continue spotlighting the bold leaders, changemakers, and inspiring voices shaping our communities and beyond. Thanks again, Tonya.
Thank you for having me, Melody.